Hi, welcome to the Spotlight Report. This week we sit down with Dr. Daewoo Kim. He is a professor of optics at the University of Arizona and has studied optical engineering for quite some time. Before that, he was studying astronomy. Additionally, he is Zhang Yu and my advisor. And this week we really have an interesting conversation with Daewoo. Basically, get excited for the future of optics. So we think it's a great talk and we hope you enjoy it. Before we get started, we'd also like to let you know that the Spotlight Report is now available on Apple iTunes, so you can subscribe to it on there. Additionally, you can always find the podcast on our website, that is loft.optics.arizona.edu/podcast. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy this week's episode. Hi, I'm Logan Graves, and this is the Spotlight Report.
Hi, I'm Xiang Yu. And before our episode today, I want to mention that our podcast is now available on the Apple iTunes. So don't forget to subscribe us. The name is The Spotlight Report.
And this week we're sitting down with Dr. Daewoo Kim, who is Zhang Yu and my advisor.
Yeah.
He has a very long background and history in optics and has worked on a number of exciting projects. So thank you and welcome.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. So with this, I could be a superstar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like CNN to me.
Yeah, well, maybe. So I guess just to start off with, what's your background in optics? How did you get into optics?
So originally, I was studying astrophysics. So my dream was study about universe, the universe. Just beautiful, so large. If human can explain the universe using a single equation, that will be super exciting. That was my dream and passion. So I started my academic career in astrophysics field. And as you know, astronomers or astrophysics scientists use telescope, which is a camera. So I was using telescopes in order to do some scientific research. As you love your topic more and more, sometimes you want to know how they make those tools, like in this case, telescope. So I decided to visit College of Optical Sciences at University of Arizona about 12 years ago, just to see how people build it. I loved it, so I just wanted to visit. And then I came here and I saw there are something amazing is going on here at the college. They were building a telescope has more than 8 meters in diameter size telescopes. And that the name is Large Binocular Telescope. And as soon as I saw that telescope under construction, I changed my mind. Universe is still beautiful. I love universe, but optical engineering is awesome. I just really liked it. The fact that you see something amazingly powerful and can do so many things for big science is just right in front of you. You can touch it. You can play with it. You can build it. You can enable a new science. That was the moment I changed my career, and that's how I started my optics career. So 12 years ago, I shifted my major into optical sciences, and since then, I have been very happy.
Yeah, this is like in the past, you're discovering, like, we're on the phone right now, you connect the signals and see how the signal works. And now you change the major into, hey, how can I build a better mobile phone for people?
That is very true.
Yeah. So what specific either projects or fields of optics have you worked on?
So right now I am leading a group called LOFT. I love this name. It's a L-O-F-T, Large Optics Fabrication and Testing. So as you can imagine from the name, our group and myself is working on really cool, advanced optics technology in order to make, in order to test, in order to assemble, in order to evaluate optical components using large optics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I have been doing as my research topics. And that includes, of course, various specific topics,
mm-hmm.
such as how can you fabricate a freeform optics, really specially shaped lens components, for instance. How can you make larger than 8 meters in diameter optics?
Which is really hard.
Which is really hard. Also, how you can test
mm-hmm.
such a freeform optics or very large optics down to nanometers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where optical science becomes very exciting and challenging field of study. You build something large, but you want a accuracy and precision down to nanometers or sometimes sub-nanometers.
Mm-hmm.
And such a large dynamic range we are covering makes optics very exciting and at the same time a challenging field of study.
Yeah, we have to mention that again, that fabrication is always along with testing. Yeah.
Right, because you, when you're making the mirror, you have to know
mm-hmm.
what it is. You have to measure it to know how to change it or how to fabricate it. So.
That is exactly why our group name is Fabrication and Testing.
Yeah.
And also, that is exactly why you two are also working on those topics.
Mm-hmm.
So Logan is working on metrology, meaning measure something down to nanometers of accuracy. At the same time, Xiangyu is working on fabricating something down to nanometers of accuracy. So we always need both of them
mm-hmm.
in order to do a super science using
mm-hmm.
optics.
Yeah. So talking about that, let's talk some specific issue, like how we, like what metrology methods always use when we have to measure a large optical component.
So when you want to measure something down to nanometers or sub-nanometers, you want to use a very precise ruler, something really precise. And light is the solution. If you use light, first of all, light is very safe. Unless you look into a high-power laser with your eye, light is very safe, right? So if you send a light to something you want to measure and record the returning light, and if you can measure your test piece, that's really good because you are not touching or destroying it.
Mm-hmm.
You are not applying any stress or force. So light is so nice because it's so safe. It's not like you are putting your fingers on the part and you keep pressing and measures it.
Mm-hmm.
So light is really good. At the same time, light is so fast. Light travels at the speed of light. So what this means, your measurement can be very fast. And finally, light has a wavelength of easily hundreds of nanometers, let's say. In visible wavelengths, your wavelength could be 600 nanometers only. That wavelength of a light defines how precisely you can measure something very often.
Mm-hmm.
So based on these three important facts, if you can measure something using light, you can do a really good job. And how we can use those lights, at least I can say two things what we do in our loft group.
Mm-hmm.
One approach is using interferometry. So interferometry literally means you use a laser and you send a laser into two different paths. So half of your laser beam will go to a reference path. Reference path means you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes your reference. And at the same time, you can send the other half of the laser light into the part you want to test. So imagine a point source, a bright point laser candle emits light into space that may travel 30 meters of travel far away, and it may hit the 8 meters in diameter, world largest mirror ever made, and then that light will come back to you. Now, if you mix that returning beam with the reference beam you sent to the reference path, if you mix those two, then you can get something called interferogram. By looking at that interferogram, you can measure how the surface on the test looked like. So what this means, literally, you can tell, wow, in my 8 meters in diameter mirror surface, one section of that had about 20 nanometers of deep hole. The other section on that mirror, wow, I have 25 nanometers high mountain. So that's how interferometry works. Basically sending two beams into two paths, mixing them together, looking at the interferogram, do the data processing, and that data processing data will tell you how your surface look like. Mm-hmm. Is it high or low, or is it bumpy? That's what you can tell.
Okay.
So that we call interferometry. The other technique is deflectometry. So deflectometry is basically you have a mirror, let's say 30 meters away from you again. Now, instead of a laser candle, you put a character, let's say smile face. So you put a smile face instead of candle. That smile face will be imaged by that mirror 30 meters away from you. And that smile face will be distorted. Maybe it's crying face now. Depends on how your mirror looks
right,
like.
Right.
And if you know what kind of mirror surface can give you what kind of distorted image, you can measure the surface again, down to nanometers. So this is just something like the funny mirror at some kind of carnival places. There is just some curvy mirror, and when you stand in front of it, you may look tall or short. Your eyes may be much bigger than what it needs to be. By looking at that distorted image, you can tell how that mirror actually looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the deflectometry does. So in our group, using both interferometry and deflectometry, we measure optics down to nanometers of accuracy and precision.
And when you say that we measure it down to nanometers, you gave a really good example when you took us through a tour of the mirror lab, describing the air from peak to valley of the GMT mirror. Do you mind retelling that?
So when we say nanometers of accuracy, or when we make a mirror 8.4 meters in diameter, for instance. So we are making a mirror 8.4 meters in diameter. So it is the largest mirror ever made in human history so far. We have to make that mirror surface accurate better than 20 nanometers of RMS error. So 20 nanometers of RMS root mean squared error. So what this means, if you think about this as a size of United States, so let's say you are making this mirror, but the size is now United States. And then you have to make this whole United States flat. Of course, nothing is perfect. So you will have some mountains and canyons still. You will have some Rocky Mountains and you will have Grand Canyons. No matter how hard you try. In order to say my mission is complete, you have to make sure your Rocky Mountain is less tall than a coin tall, And your Grand Canyon should be less than coin deep. So if you can make entire United States, nothing taller than coin, nothing deeper than a coin, then you can say, my job is done. And that's exactly what we do. On 8.4 meters in diameter optical surface, the tallest mountain and deepest mountain, deepest valley, that deviation must be less than 20 nanometers of deviation, RMS. So that's why we often spend 6 or 7 years to make one mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really worth it. Right. Because once you make it, as I said at the very beginning, you can do amazing things to look at the universe for amazingly exciting science.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is amazing. Like, I always talk to some of my friends, like, I'm doing the manufacturing job, and now I have some issue with my mural. They always say, huh, it's a sooner or later job. But you do not want the later thing to be really long time. So, how we make it? Go. Like, if somebody give you a large lens and maybe they will say, huh, you will sooner or later finish it, then how we finish it within 7 years?
So, this is how we do it. Mm-hmm. Let's say if you spend 7 years or 6 years to make one mirror, very often, a camera we are working on right now, the specific project we are working on at University of Arizona now is Giant Magellan Telescope. This will be the first giant telescope belongs to a new category.
Mm-hmm.
Human defined a new category about 10 years ago, I think. The category is ELT, Extremely Large Telescope. Human defined it.
Mm-hmm.
So human defined this new category of telescopes. Right now, there is no telescope belongs to that category yet. And Giant Magellan Telescope we are working on right now is expected to be the first one in that category, finally. Because this Giant Magellan Telescope has 7 of those 8.4 meters in diameter mirrors together. So if you put 7 of them together, the diameter of this telescope primary mirror combining those 7 segments is now 25 meters. So imagine an iPhone camera, but the lens is now 25 meters in diameter. So that's the telescope we are working on right now. And now back to your question. I just said we spent 6 years to make one because it's a so expensive and highly precise mirror. Now we have to make 7 of them. So that means we have to spend 42 or 49 years to make it. No. What we do is actually you can improve the process, but also you can actually parallelize the process. So what this means, you don't have to make 7 mirrors one by one. You don't have to make it in series. You can make it all of them together in parallel. So that's what we do. So we are making those mirrors not one by one, but at the same time so that you may make multiple mirrors in maybe 10 or a little bit lower than 10 years total. So that's how we work on this kind of project, which requires ridiculously long overall project time. But because we can do such a parallel processing, we can make it realistic. So for instance, as of now, out of 7, we finished the first mirror. The first segment is completed. Right now, we are making 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th
together,
all at the same time. So that's how it goes. Okay.
Great.
And when we when we actually make the mirrors, so the way that this is done, we put glass in an oven, we spin it, and we get a rough shape of really rough glass, and we use either interferometry or deflectometry to measure it, and we can speak more about the relative advantages and disadvantages of those, but we get out a rough piece of glass, we measure it, how do we polish it? How do we get it to the right shape? And how do we get it so smooth?
So there are multiple steps, basically. So at the very beginning, what we do is, we do something called spin casting, as you just briefly mentioned. That's pretty cool technique. It's not pretty cool technique. It's extremely cool technique, I think. It has been developed here at the College of Optical Sciences. So what you do is, because you cannot buy 8.4 meters in diameter mirror substrate, it's too big. No one sells it. So we have to make our own. So usually the best way is you just cast it, which means you buy glass chunk and then you melt it in a mold and you cool it down. We call it annealing process. So you cool it down slowly. So make the glass now in a shape you want. And that annealing may take about 2 or 3 months. If you cool down a glass from liquid to solid state too quickly, there will be too much internal stress, or we call it birefringence will be in it. So you have a weak, mechanically weak mirror substrate. So that's why we go through a very specific annealing process. Make sure you have a stress-free, internal stress-free substrate. We added another very unique process here, call it spin. So it's not just a normal casting, but spin casting. So what this means, as we are melting this glass chunk, and as we are now slowly anneal it over 2 or 3 months, we are continuously rotating this oven. We are continuously spinning it. By rotate it, the top surface of this melted glass, which is liquid, will be automatically shaped as a concave shape because of the centrifugal force. So now your surface is concave. As you are slowly anneal it or make it solid again, it will remain as concave. So that saves a lot of time. Because if you don't do that, you'll have a flat surface. And flat surface is not the surface you want.
Right.
The telescope primary mirror needs to be deeply curved. Especially these days, you want a deeply curved mirror so that your telescope can be fast optical system or more compact optical system. More curved means more compact telescope or camera. So once you have that shape, now we do a process called generating. So generating is something called diamond wheel. So you have a high speed diamond wheel rotating really fast. Using that diamond wheel, you can cut the optical surface really high speed. We call it generating phase. So imagine you have a rotating diamond wheel and then you move this diamond wheel along that concave surface while your mirror underneath is rotating. So that's generating. Once you do the generating process, now we do something called grinding. So grinding means now you use a very often a tile. It's a ceramic tile. And you put a lot of large grids. Let's say sometimes it could be carbon oxide, some large grid materials. And you put some slurry or some water in between. And then you begin to wrap it, which means you do a rough grinding. It's like you are using coarse sandpaper.
Right.
So you do this rough or large grid size grinding. And then you change it into a finer sandpaper. We call it fine grinding. So you do fine grinding. At that moment, your surface is really smooth, nice shape. but not shiny yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not shiny yet. So for instance, you cannot see your face
mm-hmm.
of this reflection, which means the surface may be a little bit still foggy yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do something called polishing process. So polishing process now means now you are not using ceramic tile anymore. You are using either polishing pitch or polishing pad with polishing compound, very often cerium oxide based polishing compound.
Mm-hmm.
Using such a specific polishing compound, slurry, and polishing pad or pitch, you now rub on this foggy surface. And after you rub it for, let's say, about a month, if it's a large mirror, let's say 4 meters or 8 meters in diameter, about a month of polishing, you will get a shiny surface. Now, this surface will look like a mirror to you. So if you see this surface, you will say, wow, this is really shiny and nice surface.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not done yet. You still have about one more year to go. Because it's a shiny, but it's not shaped correct yet. The surface shape is not correct yet, down to nanometers of accuracy. So from this moment, you continue that polishing process, but now localized polishing process, which means you just rub on some area on the mirror more than the other area.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, you can remove, let's say, 10 nanometers of glass material from some specific location on the mirror. We call it direct figuring process.
Mm-hmm.
So after the polishing process, we do that direct figuring process to make sure your surface is accurate. About 1 year of that process, you claim victory. Finally, one day, your interferometric or deflectometric data will show you you are at the final shape. That's the moment we say stop everything. And in that way, you start from such a rough casted surface all the way down to this super precision optical surface.
Mm-hmm. And your dissertation work was dealing with the computer-controlled method of guiding that directed figuring, correct?
Yes.
Could you speak a bit more about what benefits that guided figuring gives us and what was done before that?
So maybe we can say in this way, in old days, people used to make flat or spherical surfaces. So spherical mirror or spherical lens. In those days, people used a tool, one polishing tool, to make such a precision optics. It was possible because if you think about it, sphere or flat has very good symmetry. If your tool fit one location on a spherical mirror, it will fit every other location on that mirror.
Mm-hmm.
It's excellent. So for instance, if I give you, Xiangyu or Logan, a, let's say, pizza dough now. So pizza dough, I give to you. And if I ask you, can you make this thing into a baseball? Then you can do it. Because what you will do is you will just put that pizza dough in between your both hands. And you just keep rolling between your both hands
mm-hmm.
long enough.
Right.
If you do it long enough, the only thing you can get is sphere.
Right.
Yeah.
By symmetry. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's beauty. That's how people made spherical optics in old days.
Mm-hmm.
These days, all those telescope optics or freeform optics do not have that symmetry anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this. Now I'm giving you a pizza dough, but now I ask you, Logan, could you please make football? I'm talking about American football,
right,
not
right.
Asian soccer ball, but could you make that weird-shaped football, American
right.
football? Now it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to continuously change the shape and strategy,
mm-hmm.
how you roll it so that you can shape American football. That's what this computer-controlled fabrication software and intelligence does.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are now working on such a free-form optics, now you have to strategically, or you have to plan how you are going to rob on one section compared to the other section. You have to continuously change the shape of your tool, but also you have to decide what kind of path you are going to follow with this tool on this optic. So there are so many things you have to simulate and optimize. It's not like statistically and randomly happening process anymore. It should be much more planned and deterministic process. For that reason, human cannot easily simulate and optimize such a complicated process. We have computer these days. So we ask a computer simulate and optimize all those process. And human, of course, we review it at the end of the day. And if we like it, we click yes. And automated robot. Robot means big polishing machine with those tools will come in and they move and dance on this mirror according to that software or intelligence decision. And that's how we do fabricate such optics using computer-controlled optical surfacing approach, which was my PhD dissertation topic.
That is really interesting. And I do have a question about during the polishing, and it's not a cleaning room. So definitely there are lots of dust, right?
That is true.
But why we still can get a really nice surface?
Yes, very often that is a question. So if you make small optics, you can actually make small optics in a clean room environment because you may put every machine into a clean room. When you make 8.4 meters in diameter, you cannot because then the clean room is too expensive and large. So you cannot do that. So in this case, what we do is whenever before we polish or fabricate such an optic, we rinse off the mirror surface or optic surface very thoroughly. Using distilled water, using distilled and filtered water, we rinse off very clearly. So no dust or particle on the surface. And also we rinse off the surface of the tool very thoroughly because we don't want any particle or dust under the tool. So we rinse off the tool thoroughly. And then we put that tool on the mirror surface, carefully making sure no dust or particle is trapped in between. That is the magic. So as long as you do not trap a particle in between tool and mirror surface, now those two will be always in an intimate contact. Very close contact between them as it rubbing on this mirror. Which means it is so intimate contact. If, let's say, during this run, during polishing run, which sometimes goes a week, we do one run for a week very often. Within a week, maybe some particle or dust sitting on some other part of the mirror. As this tool approach that section on the mirror, that particle still cannot find a way between the tool and mirror, because it's so intimate contact, they will always push away. So that's why we can still get such a nice mirror surface.
That is great.
But we have to make sure it's a really clean and thoroughly rinsed off. One scratch may set you back by a year. Because if you think about it, optical manufacturing is a one-way process. You remove glass, but you are not adding glass. So if you make a one deep scratch, you cannot fill it. Instead, you have to bring the rest of the mirror down to that depth. So you don't want to create any low area.
And I think it's worth mentioning too that when I first joined the group, I was helping out on the infrared deflectometry for the DECUS primary. And as a first year graduate student, I was very nervous to be around this large mirror and the optical fabrication shop. I didn't have experience with it. And Tan Chuan said, make sure your keys, make sure everything's out of your pocket, because you have to go in a tower above the mirror. Don't get near the mirror. Don't look over it. Dan made sure that I, you know, wasn't close to the mirror.
No wedding rings.
No, nothing. No metal nothing. On your body, like you're in an MRI, and you get an appreciation for how careful you have to be.
Right.
And then in a couple weeks, I see Cheng Zhen, I think, walking in booties on top of the mirror, or Brian or whoever it was going to be, putting fiducials on.
Right, on them, yeah.
And the switch from, like, you're walking on this mirror, obviously very carefully, but it is interesting to remember that you scratches are really what you want to avoid, but it is a big piece of glass, and you can walk on it
right.
to do some necessary measurements. So
as long as you know what to do, and as long as you are careful, it is doable.
Right. And these are certainly people who knew what they were doing. It's just so funny to see someone walking on this mirror and going, oh, man.
Yeah.
So actually making optics or doing optical science is like making a good coffee. You don't hurry up. You take time to
mm-hmm.
grind your coffee bean. And you take time to pour your water, goes through the filters.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to hurry up, right?
You
just do everything slowly and in the right way. Then you have a good coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that. There is a very well-defined process, and you have to just go through it without hurry. Just carefully, one by one, do a good job,
mm-hmm.
and then you will get the final product. Of course, in between, there are so many technical challenges.
Right.
Something requires breakthrough technologies and new scientific technologies or instruments.
So I think we're getting close to being out of time. And before we finish, I think it'd be good to cover what current research topics are going on in the Loft group and what projects you see either outside of the group or would be excited to see starting up. Like what do you think is the future in terms of optical research?
So right now, what we do in the group at the moment is maybe in two ways. In terms of fabrication, this is what Xiang Yu is also working on. We want to come up with a post-processing technology. So what this means, let's say you made a free-form optics using some technique. One of the technique could be diamond tunneling. So you use a very sharp point diamond tip and you basically carve a free-form optic you want. Or you may use 3D printer. You may use 3D printer to print your freeform optics.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? You may 3D print it. Actually, there are such a company doing that. The problem of this kind of technique, this kind of approach is diamond tunneling or 3D printing. If you really zoom in to your surface, there are mid to high spatial frequency errors.
Mm-hmm.
Because your 3D printing could be maybe point by point or layer by layer process.
Yeah.
Same thing, diamond tunneling. That sharp tip carving, you have tool mark
mm-hmm.
left. So one technique we are developing right now is using a full-size tool on top of such a mid to high spatial frequency error.
Mm-hmm.
And by applying some specific motion and technique and approach, we can make those surfaces smooth. So it is smoothing process.
While retaining the shape.
Right, while
right.
we are maintaining the freeform shape. So it's a very interesting and exciting technique, and that's one thing we do in
mm-hmm.
optical fabrication. In metrology, we are recently doing some more dynamic things. Dynamic means now we want to measure something real time. So it's not like, okay, I will measure you. Don't move. Don't move for 5 minutes. And then I will measure you over 5 minutes and you may move after that. That has been the case. Sometimes you shouldn't move for an hour. Sometimes that's okay. That's definitely fine. But some applications, it is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if what you want to measure is time-varying thing. Let's say you want to measure a deformable mirror, continuously changing the shape as a function of time. then you cannot say stop, freeze, right. And then I will be like, no, you cannot do that because it's changing. If you can come up with a real-time or instantaneous metrology technique, you can measure such a dynamic surface. So these days we are developing, for instance, one example is instantaneous phase shifting deflectometry, which we use multiplexed pattern in order to enable an instantaneous metrology. So we actually used it on iPhone. So we implemented this deflectometry technique on an iPhone and we measured a deformed mirror surface, which is changing as a function of time. And that's, I mean, what Isaac, who is another student in our group, just recently did a wonderful job there. And the publication has been made last December. So that kind of, I mean, dynamic metrology is one theme in our group. And there are many others, but maybe you want to just visit our website or visit Optical Sciences at University of Arizona. And our group members, including Logan and Xiangyu, will be happy to give you some nice lab tours.
Or listen to more of the podcast, because we've interviewed Isaac and I guess we'll release my interview.
Yeah.
We're trying to interview all of these optics students,
wonderful.
So that's another way to hear more about it.
Yes. And finally, what is the future of optics? I don't know, but I think that's why it's so exciting. The future of optics, there are just so many things you can do with light. To me, mechanical engineering or electrical engineering has been amazing and did so many things for human life, just so many things. I mean, today, cars, airplanes, and computers, smartphones, so many things, thanks to those mechanical and electrical engineering, so many things happened. Amazing. What could be next big thing? Well, I think optics, light or photon. Because as I said, light is very safe. It doesn't harm you. It's really fast. And human can see it. It's a big thing because human really want to see something. So it's a great interface between human and whatever technology out there. So I think light has so many potential in it. Building a telescope is exciting. And large optics manufacturing, testing, it's a great theme. So many technologies will be continuously developed over the next decades. But at the same time, optics can be an enabling technology for so many other things in the future. So it is very difficult to predict this will be the way. But I can say one thing, no matter what you do, or no matter what you see in future device, optics will play a key role in it. Just go and check out any exciting sci-fi movie today.
Yeah.
Star Wars or Star Trek, just pick one. You will see something, oh my God, that's optics.
Yeah.
Not real yet, but that's optics. Why? Because that's what human wants. That's the way human wants to proceed.
Yeah.
So light, I think we have a bright future. Just because it's a light.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
That's my view about the future optics technology.
Okay.
Great. I think that should just about do it. I guess in closing, actually, maybe, do you have any advice for graduate students?
Okay. If I have to say...
Do you have any advice for me on my project?
If I have to say one thing to student, I think this is not really about optics. I love optics and that's my field of study and research. Same to you. But if you're a student, what you want to do is you want to define a problem you think it's interesting, exciting, and hopefully benefit community and hopefully even benefit the world.
Mm-hmm.
You define such an exciting problem, and as a student, you learn, investigate, and research about that problem, and solve it. Optics is main theme of your approach.
Mm-hmm.
So as you study and research, make sure you know why you are doing it. I think that's really important. It's not about optics. I think it's about your life. And right now, as a student, if you can really understand why you are doing it, and if you believe it's a really valuable thing, and hopefully using optics, you should be able to come up with an amazing solution. And everyone will be happy. Your advisor, me, will be happy. You'll get your graduation, of course. But even beyond that,
right.
You will like this moment as a student. So don't make it just optics.
Mm.
Because optics is a vehicle you're riding. It's not the destination, I think.
Mm.
You define your destination in your way. And as long as you stay in that path, you will be very happy and successful. I think that is a very important message to students, I'd like to say, but also I'm saying same thing to myself. I say exactly same thing to myself whenever I think, oh, why I'm here? Oh, right, this is why.
Great.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I think that wraps it up, so.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. You have a good rest of the day.
Great. And thank you for listening to the Spotlight Report this week. If you have any feedback or would like to recommend other people that we interview, please email us at thespotlightreport@gmail.com.
Yeah, and don't forget to follow us on Facebook, which is the SPL Report. If you want to know more about optics, just follow us.